Stock up for Sunday's big game with Big Storm Beer. There's nothing better than an ice cold Big Storm Wave Maker Amber Ale when the game starts. And that's the original, the first Big Storm beer in a long line of great craft beers brewed in Clearwater. Try the Brumosa, too, the fantastic Tangerine IPA, or enjoy Tropic Pressure Florida Ale. See all the great beers at BigStormBrewery.com. The Big Storm Tap Room in Clearwater and their delicious food is the site of the Big Joe BucksFan.com NFL Draft Party on April 23rd. That date's set in stone. And I will be at Big Storm for Bucks Road Games next season. I'll see all of you Buck fans at Big Storm Brewery.
Thank you for listening to the Ira Kaufman Podcast, episode number 2 this week. As always, presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford, right there on Dale Mabry Highway, just north of the stadium. This is such a big week for Ira. John Lynch will be presented again, and should I say again and again and again, for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He is a finalist. In 2013, he first became eligible as a semifinalist, and it is such a political process. Ira puts so much time and stress and energy behind the scenes for no money whatsoever to get John Lynch into the Hall of Fame. Hopefully this is the year. For Ira's sake, Lynch, he'll get there one day, but Ira, he doesn't have a lot of years to live. So we have to look out for the guy, and we wish him good luck here from JoeBucksFan.com. Of course, the Buccaneers, are they really doing all they can with their powerful social media reach and their network of ex-players to get Lynch into the Hall of Fame? The answer is a big fat no, but that's a story for another day. Let's hope Ira can overcome the Bucs and get Lynch in there. The Ira Kaufman Podcast is also presented by Pin Chasers. Remember Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday, you can start right away with the Sunday Breakfast Bowl. Great thing to do with the kids. Breakfast and unlimited bowling for just $9 at Pin Chasers locations. Go to pinchasers.net. It goes from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. 2 hours of bowling, two eggs your way, bacon, toast, bowling, $9. It's a great deal every day. Every single day is a daily special at Pin Chasers that will just blow you away. And shoes are always free. Pinchasers.net. Remember, 3 Tampa area locations. Pin Chasers is always a great time. Now, we thank you for listening on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, which is the same thing, Podbean, Google Play, Stitcher, and the thousands who listen right at JoeBucksFan.com. The podcast continues to grow, and we continue to thank you. Leave a review at Apple Podcasts. Ira reads those things. He gets a laugh out of them. Same thing at Podbean. And here is the sage of Tampa Bay sports.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Ira Kaufman Podcast, where we graciously invite and celebrate the one and only, the king of Pasco County, the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the custodian of Canton. Ladies and gentlemen, he's the one and only, he's Uncle Ira. He's Ira Kaufman. Ira, how you doing today, man? Big week for Ira.
Thanks, baby. You know, Lee, Bill Curry Ford simply cannot be beat when it comes to price and service. And now you can even work personally with my buddy, Sean Sullivan, general manager of Bill Curry Ford. Sean Sullivan will help you personally on your next vehicle purchase. He'll treat you like he treats me, like family. No pressure. Concierge service. Call Sean, email him, or walk into the Bill Curry Ford showroom and ask for the man, Sean Sullivan. In addition to a nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles and the best prices in Tampa, you will experience the attention that only comes from a true family-owned dealership, one that truly cares about customers like Bill Curry Ford. See all those deals at BillCurryFord.com, and I highly recommend the 2020 Ford Escape. Mine is cherry red, best ride I've ever had. That's BillCurryFord.com. Lee, we're like two ships passing in the night going through Miami. Lee, you just got back. You spent a few days. You filed about 111 different posts on your 3-day trek, and I'm on my way to Miami. You called me the custodian of Canton. Let's hope that that title applies for the class of 2020. I was just putting the finishing touches on my John Lynch speech. Lee, it's about 6.5 minutes. Unless I get some more compelling material, I don't think I need it. I'm giving it my best shot. It's a totally different type of presentation that I've made 6 previous times that Mr. Lynch has been in the room. And Lee, you just got back from seeing Mr. Lynch and his 49ers. I'm a Chiefs fan. Lee, I'll say this right now. I hope John Lynch has one of the greatest days in his life on Saturday, and then has a very depressing Sunday as my Chiefs take care of business. This should be one heck of a football game, Lee. The odds makers say it's even. I think it's even. And you know what? Even though I think you could argue that the 49ers are a more complete team, they scored more points than the Chiefs did this year. That's very surprising.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And they certainly have a better defense. But you know what? I like the karma that's going on with the Chiefs. I like the chemistry. I think they've caught some breaks along the way. Miami beating New England. Nobody expected that. Otherwise, they would have had to play that first week. They healed up. Baltimore getting knocked out. Everybody thought that the AFC title game would be KC at Baltimore. That's a tough matchup for the Chiefs. It didn't happen. Instead, they were home for Tennessee. I mean, that's quite a difference.
I'll just say this about the Super Bowl. We can go on and talk about the Bucs. People listen. They want to listen to you talk about the Bucs. I just get the scent that this is like the 49ers and the Dolphins years ago. Montana versus Marino. Marino, as far as a passer goes, I don't know if you can do any better. Mahomes looks to me like the Marino of his day. But the 49ers have the better team.
I don't like that, DeKemper. I don't like that analysis.
I'm rooting for the Chiefs, Ira. But it just comes across to me like the 49ers and the Dolphins years ago. That one team had easily, clearly the superior quarterback, but the other team had the better team. Now, Ira, I've been at both events. They're big NFL events. And people are talking about the Bucs. And they're talking about Jameis. I just got back from the Super Bowl. Well, at least, Super Bowl opening night, I talked to Quan, and I'm happy for Quan. I'm way happy. And I've never seen Quan so excited. He's just over the top. But I've talked to some people that were talking about the Bucs, and a couple in particular, Jimmy Johnson and Terry Bradshaw. Now, I want your reaction. They were both coming from completely different angles, but they were both absolutely adamant, pro and con Jameis. I want your reaction to both theirs.
Well, Jimmy Johnson had the line in terms of Jameis Winston saying that the Bucs were the most exciting bad team, did he say, in football?
The most exciting bad team in the NFL,
There's a lot of truth in that statement. Now, if you say that 7-9 is bad, which, you could argue, if you're not 500, you're bad.
Yeah.
You don't make the playoffs, for 12 straight years, you're bad. But damn, they're exciting. Number 3 scoring offense in the league. They cashed in with touchdowns instead of field goals in the red zone. I think that was a big improvement in 2019. It's one of the reasons that I changed my mind about Winston, because they scored touchdowns and they started winning games until those last two. I mean, they had a chance, to have a winning record. They really did, which would have been remarkable when you start off 2-7. That's quite remarkable. So I can't argue with Jimmy, and there's only one Jimmy Johnson. And you made a big mistake because you didn't congratulate him for entering the Hall of Fame over there.
There wasn't time.
That would have ingratiated yourself with Johnson.
No, here's what ingratiated me with him. When he said that, and this gets to the point, I've said this before, and this proved it. And it was the same with Bradshaw. A dozen, maybe 15 reporters around Jimmy Johnson when I walked up. It was 3 deep. So I'm behind the third line of people. And I heard Jimmy Johnson say about that about the Bucs. There was no one, if they're from Tampa, I never met him before, no one from Tampa was there but me. No one. And Johnson was talking about the Bucs, a 7-19. Okay. Why is that? Number 3. When I went up to Bradshaw, same thing, there was a scrum around him. I was maybe, behind line number 2. There was about 10 people around Bradshaw. Who was he talking about? The Bucs and Jameis. No one else from Tampa was there. And I've said this all along. Jameis makes the Bucs relevant. And the Glazers love that. Now, he makes the Bucs relevant. But
let's talk about Jimmy Johnson for a second. Lee, here's something I've been thinking of. There was a very famous college game when Johnson was at UM. It was the Fiesta Bowl.
Penn State. Very famous. Jopa.
Miami had a much better team than Penn State. Penn State had
Where you're going.
Good defense, no offense. I was at the game.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, the game was in Phoenix.
You and Doomy.
I was there. And Vinny threw 5 interceptions. They lost the game, 14-10. And it was a huge upset. Penn State didn't have a quarterback. Miami had Vinny. He was the Heisman Trophy winner.
Well, Penn State was all defense.
So he self-destructed. And then you go to the pros, and who's Jimmy got? And by the way, the next year he had Steve Walsh. Wasn't half the college quarterback that Vinny was. And Jimmy won the national championship with Steve Walsh, who didn't throw a lot of picks. Then Jimmy goes to the Cowboys and they end up with Troy Aikman, who ends up in Canton. And what's Aikman's reputation? Game manager, very smart, doesn't make a lot of mistakes. Of course, they had a great running game, which helps. But he doesn't throw a lot of picks. He's efficient. He's a model of efficiency. That's Jimmy Johnson's background with quarterbacks. Goes to Miami, he's got Marino, another Hall of Famer. So now he's looking at Jameis Winston, and after he talked about how exciting the Bucs are for a bad football team, he said basically that he couldn't live with 30 picks. He couldn't do it. Very understandable given where Jimmy Johnson, his football pedigree.
Yeah. And Jimmy Johnson at his core is a running guy. Run, run, run. There was some issue that when he went to Miami, though he got to the playoffs with Marino, that he was taking the ball out of Marino's hands, that he wanted to run, run, run.
That caused a little friction between him and Marino.
Yes, it did. But Marino had enough common sense to know that Jimmy Johnson was a hell of a coach. And matter of fact, I think it was Jimmy Johnson was going to retire earlier than he did, and Marino talked him out of it. So Marino knew that even though he was taking the ball out of his hands, Marino knew, big picture, Jimmy Johnson, he needed him. Another thing about Jimmy Johnson that adds weight to what he said. Fumble, he was talking about a running back. He fumbles the ball. He goes, he can get 10 yards, 10 yards, 10 yards, 10 yards, and fumble. I want a guy to give me 4 yards, 4 yards, 4 yards, 4 yards, and we keep the ball. And he talked about the turnovers. He goes, he wouldn't play for me. And I thought that was very interesting. But here's the background on Jimmy Johnson.
You wonder if Arians is starting to think like that. You wonder.
Time will tell. Jimmy Johnson likes Jameis. A couple years ago, I ran into Jimmy Johnson, one of these Super Bowl media things. I asked him about Jameis. He raved about, oh, I like him, man. And you know how Jimmy Johnson, when he gets fired up, he talks like Barry Switzer when he gets fired up? That's what he was doing. He likes Jameis. And I know Jimmy Johnson, 2 or 3 years ago, talked with someone high up with the Bucs. Because this guy told me this conversation. That they were having, this guy was having a conversation with Jimmy Johnson. And Jimmy Johnson said, in the NFL, if you don't have a quarterback, you can't win. And you, my friend, have a quarterback. You've seen about Jameis. So the fact that Jimmy Johnson, who likes Jameis, said you got to move on.
So he's flipped.
He hasn't flipped. He's like saying realism. He's like, I like this guy. I like his talent. I like what he could do. But you can't tolerate the picks.
And it's not personal.
No, it's not personal. It's not personal at all. And Chris Myers, who I talked to, I know Steve Isbitz, my co-conspirator, JoeBucksFan.com. He got Myers talking on SiriusXM NFL Radio, and he posted a picture. I had an extensive interview with Chris Myers. I was waiting for next week.
Very familiar with the Buck organization.
Oh, yeah, he's the preseason voice of the Bucks. I've been working for the Bucks for years. And he's like, he's so depressed about Jameis. He likes Jameis. He wanted Jameis to work out, but he said, you can't put up with this anymore. Anytime anybody talks about the Bucks, we think that's relevant for fans. And we act accordingly. And I think that is a big part of our success. We don't ignore sports radio. We don't ignore coaches. And people say, well, why do you talk to Terry Bradshaw? The guy played the game. Why? He's got 4 rings. Why would you not talk to Terry Bradshaw? You know?
And you're going to report no matter what he said, whether he was pro Jameis.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't go in with any preconceived notions.
That's unethical.
And some people think you do.
I don't. If that was the case, I never would have printed Jimmy Johnson's words. And by the way, when I went up to Jimmy Johnson, like I said, I was like 3 lines deep. And I heard Jimmy Johnson say that about the quote that you like. At
it's our most exciting bad team.
I busted out laughing. And he heard me. He looked at me and goes, they are. I said, I know they are. And we talked back. And we, you know, you said you should have said congratulations. That wasn't the time or the place. But we built a little bit of a bond there because he heard me laughing. And he was talking to me like I was in his bar. He wasn't talking to the other reporters. He was talking straight to
me. Like he was in Key West.
Yeah, yeah. Or Isla Mirada. Brent Musburger was the first guy I heard said, Jameis is Mr. Entertainment. There's no more entertaining player in the NFL. Musburger's words, not mine, bar none. And he said that on Chris Russo's show on SiriusXM Radio. And I interviewed Russo. And I said, Chris, I never heard your reaction to Brent Musburger. I heard Brent Musburger tell you more than once that Jameis was the most exciting player in the NFL, bar none. Most entertaining. And Russo, as only Russo could do, he snapped back at me. He said, because he keeps both teams in the game.
That's my man, Russo, boiling it down to the essentials. So, and really, can you argue that point?
No, not at all. Now, here's what Bradshaw said. And Bradshaw, you can tell, is personally offended. He thinks Jameis is being harshly criticized.
And Bradshaw was called a lunkhead. in his first few years in the NFL. People
called him
a dummy, and he was being carried by that great defense, and he was holding them back.
Wasn't it Hollywood Henderson said, if you spotted them, the C and the A couldn't spell cat?
I believe that. The C and the T, maybe. Yeah. That was the line.
And anyway, I wish I could.
So he ended up with four Super Bowl
rings.
Yeah,
we all wish your team could have a quarterback so dumb he gets four rings, you know?
And he's in Kent.
He was a turnover machine early in his career. He had 74 interceptions his first 4 years. Has 14-game season, Ira.
Nice.
14-game season.
So and he had Franco Harris.
And after his, second year, he had Swan and Stallworth. Not Benny Cunningham, although he was a good tight end. Grossman, the guy from Philadelphia Temple. He was an underrated tight end.
So Bradshaw thinks that Winston is unfairly maligned.
Oh, yeah. And I think part of it is he sees himself in Jameis. He's like, hell, I threw a lot of interceptions, but we won.
Big difference.
Exactly. I think he's absolutely on the mark. If the Bucs had a winning record and wound up at a Pro Bowl, half the people freaking out about Jameis and his picks wouldn't be talking about it. They'd be talking about that the Bucs finally got back to the playoffs, the future is bright. I really believe that. That last freaking pass that Jameis threw, that pick six, that's in people's minds throughout the offseason. And I understand why. I get it. There's no excuse you can make for that pass. But Bradshaw was talking about, I threw a lot of turnovers. I threw a lot of interceptions. And he talked about the good of Jameis. And he brought up something I'd never heard anybody say before. Bradshaw said he watched some of the tape. He said, Jameis goes through his progressions, but not quick enough. And he said, that's why he's not seeing linebackers. He's taking too long to go through his progressions. They didn't see the linebacker underneath. And that was Jameis' bugger.
Linebackers are killing the guy.
Yeah. And Bradshaw, he started snapping his fingers. I can't snap my fingers right now because my fingers are too moist right now. But he's like, boom, boom. He said, boom, 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 as he's snapping his fingers. And this is coming from a quarterback who should know. I thought that was very interesting. But Bradshaw also said something else about Jameis. He was a little bit off, but I get what he was saying. I'm talking about Jameis's picks. And he said, look, man, the last year we won the Super Bowl, I threw 25 picks and 25 touchdowns. No one said anything. Well, Bradshaw was a little bit off. Bradshaw threw 26 touchdowns and 25 picks.
For a world champion?
They won, yeah, for a world champion. So that kind of says, what Jimmy Johnson said, you can't win with the picks? Well, Bradshaw had 25, only one more touchdown, and they won. Of course, Bradshaw had the all-time defense. Bucks don't have that luxury. So it's going to be interesting because I don't know what the options are. Yeah, there's other guys out there, but is Philip Rivers? To me, Philip Rivers is an old, immobile version of Jameis. And by the way, Bradshaw was talking about Winston. He's like, this guy makes some amazing plays. He makes plays, he goes, that's rare.
By the way, I talked to Lynch this week and asked him specifically about Quan Alexander. And I asked him how Alexander played against the Vikings in his return. He said he played well, but more importantly, Lynch stressed what an emotional boost he provided
really?
To the San Francisco defense. He just brings that kind of energy. And we always talked about that, about Quan. I always mentioned, sometimes he takes bad angles to the ball. Sometimes he's over dramatic in his pursuit. But you could never knock, his passion for the game. Never.
Ira, I want your take on this. Brian Glazer, one of the co-owners of the Bucks. The Glazer family doesn't like notoriety. They don't like to get out there in public. It's partially uncomfortable for them.
I see Arthur Blank made the rounds.
Well, that's Arthur Blank. Jerry Jones is out there too, but Jerry Jones is Brian Glazer.
Well, he pulled up in his yacht. I don't know if Joe Glazer's going to do that.
Yeah, well, they're uncomfortable. I get that. Some people, they love the limelight. Some people are uncomfortable with the limelight. I get that. And, of course, I think they believe in a business sense that it's not good for them to be a Jerry Jones or Artie Blank or whatever. And until he gets your name right, he will be Artie Blank.
That's right. I like that.
Irv. Brian Glazer makes an appearance on a podcast. Okay. That's different. I think that was pretty cool. Had something interesting to say. Where is Jason Light? Now, we all know the Glazer family. They don't like to go out in public. They generally only speak once a year. That's at the owners' meetings. That's not a critique. That's the way they do business. That I'm okay with that. Where's the general manager? The last time that I know of, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm just going off of my shaky memory. The last time I remember Jason Light fielding any questions on the record was his post-draft press conference.
I think that might be right. Which
was
that might be right.
The end of April 2019. Here's an ownership group that we know doesn't like to talk. We don't expect them to talk as a result. Yet they're out there, even if it's just one appearance. Yet the general manager, whose decisions result in day-to-day direct result, what goes on with the Bucks, where is he?
Theoretically, you will get him in Indianapolis.
That's almost a year gone by. I like Jason Light a lot. I really do. You know, we expect coaches daily to appear. Daily, coaches. The general manager is just as important, maybe more so than the coach. I mean, it comes across to me like he's hiding, and I know Jason is not comfortable with the press. I get that. He does not dislike the press. You know Jason. You talk to Jason one-on-one, great guy. You whip out a microphone, man, he tenses up.
I think, Lee, the franchise has decided they want one voice. That voice is going to be Bruce Arians.
Oh, interesting.
And I think that's the way you could say New England does that. But Kraft's all over the place. Kraft
yes.
talks.
He loves the limelight.
He loves the limelight.
And he loves a few other things in Miami too much. But I think... let's not deviate.
I think a very strong point in what to back up what you're saying is, if the owners are not going to talk at the end of the season, which they don't, can we at least get the general manager at the end of the season to wrap up, even without a coaching change? It doesn't have to be a coaching change. Some of it starts at the end of the season to tide us over until the Indianapolis Combine, which is late February. I don't think that's asking too much.
Well, I'm not knocking you for saying
it. I mean, the Bucks. This is a very busy offseason for the Tampa Bay Bucks.
Very. You know that. That's what I mean. It's so important. But people sometimes misunderstand what I'm about to say, and I want to be very clear about this. I don't give a damn if Light talks to you, to Isbitz, to Rock Riley. When he talks to the media, he's talking to fans. We don't have access to these. The fans don't have access to these guys like we do. We're their eyes. We're their ears. I would hope, you know, we're supposed to represent fans. So when Light or whomever, Glazer, whatever, talks to us, they're talking to the fans. We're the conduit. And so I think there's a little bit of a responsibility that a guy in a position that Light is in, he should at least give the fans some morsels of information, what the team's planning, what their
thinking.
Outlook is. Yeah, I'm not ripping Light for this, and I know he's going to talk at the Combine, but it's been almost a year. And when the guys cutting their checks, who are known to be introverts, are out there, come on, Jason. And you know what you said I never thought of before that makes a lot of sense. Maybe they decided, which a lot of teams do, there's going to be one voice.
You know the irony of this whole thing is a few years ago when they hired Cutter, the Glazers made a big point in saying that the Light has expanded duties.
That's right.
And now, you know, we're back to where we started. Now, I want to say a couple of things about John Lynch. As I get ready to depart for Miami International. And I've already talked to a few people that they don't like the scene down there. They don't like the media workroom. They don't think it's very conducive. There's not nearly as many reporters as there used to be. That's a whole other podcast. I used to walk into the media workroom, and I've been to a lot of Super Bowls. I virtually knew everybody in that room because they're all newspaper hacks like I was.
And it was a closed environment. They wouldn't let anybody else in.
And now I go in, and everybody's 21 years old.
Yeah.
And they're all working on their computers, and they got a podcast, and they got this and that. It's a whole new ballgame. But as far as John Lynch, let me say this. First of all, he's done a marvelous job as an executive. This is his third different version of himself. Yeah, he was a player and a heck of a player, Hall of Fame player, in our opinion. And then a broadcaster who got better every year, was very raw in the beginning, and worked so hard at it like he did as a player, because his first few years with the Bucks, he wasn't a starter. He was an afterthought. And all of a sudden, he becomes a starter when Dungy shows up in town in 96 and is a great player for two different franchises, as attested by being in the Ring of Honor for both franchises. That's a rare distinction. So,
quickly tell the story about who told the Bucks to draft him. You know that, right?
I believe it might have been Mr. Bill Walsh.
It was Bill Walsh.
Who saw him in Stanford. And said, you need this guy.
And what did he do?
He's going to be a player.
What did Bill Walsh do to Lynch when Bill Walsh took over Stanford?
I don't know if he changed his position.
Yeah, Lynch was the starting quarterback. The first thing he did was move him to safety.
Yeah. And he was also a pitcher.
Yeah.
He was also, I think he threw the first pitch in Marlins history.
Yeah, so. Their organization, yeah.
As an organization. Look, we're wishing him the best of luck, Lee. This could be a spectacular weekend for John Lynch. He deserves everything he's gotten. I'm privileged to make the case for him, and it's a hell of a case. And I'll give our fans a little bit of an insight of one or two things that happened this week. We got some quotes from some people that are not very quotable. They are not prone to hyperbole. I'm not going to mention one guy's name, but he happened to play the same position that John Lynch did.
He's an all-time great.
But I will give you this one. And I didn't hear this, but somebody else did and took some notes and gave me the quotes. Will Cain has a show. You know Will Cain. I believe it's ESPN Radio.
I don't even know. I know.
He had a guest this week. The guest, Mr. Barry Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
Just another player that happens to be one of the 20 greatest players in NFL history, regardless of position. Possibly the number three running back in NFL history.
Number two is Peyton?
I would think so.
And number one, of course, is Jim Brown.
I would say Brown and Peyton.
Okay.
Some people might like Sanders ahead of Peyton. I you could argue. Anyway, Will Cain put this question to Barry Sanders. And you know this is in my speech, and I think it's going to be the end of my speech. Sometimes you get something so good that you end with it, and you sit your keister down, and you let it percolate in the room a little bit. It was like what
Dick Butkus and sat down?
Well, it was like what Belichick said about Sapp that year, where he was talking about Sapp and Brooks is the closest thing he's ever seen to Joe Green and Jack Ham. Sapp played closer to the ball, and if you didn't take care of Sapp, none of the rest mattered. Now, you can't beat that quote. So I sat down 20 minutes later. He had a gold jacket. Would it have happened without the Belichick quote? We'll never know. But when Belichick talks, people listen. Same thing with Sanders. Will Cain posed this question to Barry Sanders. Barry, is there one guy right now who doesn't have a bust in Canton who you believe belongs in the Pro Football Hall of Fame? There was no hesitation from Barry Sanders. My vote goes to John Lynch. Barry Sanders is well aware of this year's ballot. He knows all about Edgerrin James. He knows all about Steve Atwater and Leroy Butler.
Palomalu.
And Palomalu and Steve Hutchinson and Faneker and Boselli and all of them. And Isaac Bruce. He's well aware of them. He didn't hesitate. John Lynch. And he said, I played against him. My vote goes for John Lynch. I think that's my ending to Kemper. And
so you're giving fans a peek what's going to...
A little peek inside
the room.
And I've timed my speech. It's about 6.5-7 minutes. Who knows? I might get a quote from a Bill Parcells and have to add it to my presentation. And I'll be happy to do it. But I'm going in. And Lee, this is all I'm going to say. Look, we can't get carried away because we've been disappointed 6 times in the past with John Lynch. And I understand John Lynch's frustration. Don't you? History says if you're in that room 7 times in a row, you get a bust in Canton. History is unequivocal about it. No defensive player.
You got to use that word, unequivocal.
Unequivocal. No defensive player that's ever been in that room 7 years in a row or more doesn't have a gold jacket. Never happened.
Not even Kuchenberg.
He's an offensive player.
Oh, okay.
Never happened in 50 years. 50 years, we're going to start making an exception for John Lynch? This is crazy. So I'm not going to be overconfident. But Lee, you were down there. I'm sensing a little momentum.
I do too.
This 49ers thing is not going to hurt him.
I spoke with a guy who used to cover the NFC Central. I hope listeners heard that correctly. NFC Central. And he self-admittedly told me, he goes, I don't talk a lot at those Hall of Fame meetings. He said, Saturday might be an exception. He said he's sick of Lynch getting a shaft.
Well, when you and I get together for next week's podcast, I'm either going to be in a jubilant mood or a very depressed mood. And I'm going to end it with this. I don't think you can top this.
If it's coming from you, it's unlikely.
You're not going to be able to top it, and I'll say it right now on this podcast. If you tell me right now, before I leave for Miami, Lynch gets a gold jacket and the Chiefs lose, I will take it. I will accept that and be very happy. How do you like that, Mr. DeKemper?
That can't be topped.